Because I really was asking a lot of questions about why do people do the things that they do? Why do people buy the things that they buy? Why do they like to the taste of certain things over other things? And so that was really the beginnings. And so when I joined IFF, I actually joined in a hybrid role, which was partly consumer insights and partly marketing. And I thought, they're going to find out one day I don't know what I'm doing in marketing.
Welcome to the Meaningful Jobs podcast season 3. I'm your host, Adrian, and today we're extremely honored to welcome Karen Stanton from IFF, who is the VP of Marketing and Insights. So how are you, Karen? Hope you're well.
I'm absolutely rocking it. How are you?
Well, rocking it as well.
Awesome.
Well, you know, before diving into what it's like working for your company, I thought it'd be great for the audience to get to know yourself a bit better and how you got, you know, to become the VP of Marketing at such a big company.
Yeah, absolutely. Happy to share my story with you. It's kind of a long story, so hopefully the podcast people have got a couple of hours, right?
Oh yes, they have. So it's fine.
Great, great.
Yeah.
Look, you know, the story begins with a little bit of an obsession around around experiences and the five senses. And so my whole journey started when I was a kid, and I was so inspired by Willy Wonka. I don't know how whether you've seen the movie.
I've seen it multiple times.
So I just love the whole concept of being able to taste and smell and experience food and fragrances in you know, in a really creative way. And so that was really what started or ignited this passion around the five senses for me. And so I actually studied science at university, and so I went into the food science arena, which kind of seems a little odd, I guess, because now I'm working in marketing. But to have a science background was really the genesis of my story. And then I started to do consumer research. And then from consumer research, I grew into some new spaces. So if you can't tell from my accent, and I'm sure you have listeners from all over the world,
yeah.
But I began my journey in Australia. And so that's where the accent is from.
I think
but
a lot of people really like the Australian accent. So
I'm
you're
not
doing
sure.
Fine. No? Okay. Well, I'm speaking on behalf of some people anyway.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Great. But so I started my journey there, and then when I was working in consumer research straight out of university, the company I was working for at the time was a startup, and it was before startups were cool. Like it really was before startups were cool. I was kind of the gopher.
Well,
so
you're the
I
pioneer then,
years and go for
basically.
that. Yeah, there you go. And
That's
so
a good word.
It began with those kinds of you know, we're sitting around a boardroom table, and there was like literally a handful of us in this startup, and we talked about expanding the business, and someone said, well, I think we need to go to Asia. Who wants to go to Asia? And so I found myself with my hand up in the air, and following that, spent then 10 years in living in the Asia region, expanding the business. And that's when I joined IFF. So I joined them when I was living in Singapore, and then spent quite a number of years with them in the Asia region before being tapped on the shoulder to move to the US and have a global role. And the US is where I sit right now. So it was kind of this movement from consumer and insight and strategy into the marketing space. And that's where I sit now as the VP of marketing for IFF. And many, probably some of your listeners are like, who is IFF? But you've used our products multiple times today. I guarantee it. And maybe you didn't even realize it. So we're in one in every four fragrances that you might wear. And I'm not just talking about perfumes, but if you washed your clothes in a detergent which had a fragrance, or if you washed your hair with a shampoo that had a fragrance, or if you ate a food product that had some kind of extract botanical flavoring in it, many of those products come from IFF. So there was a very famous quote by one of our CEOs in 1970 who said, "We are in the sex and hunger game." And so that's the way that the way in which I would describe the industry that we're in. We're in sex and hunger.
That seems like a really tough industry to be in, sex and hunger.
Well,
And
you know, isn't everybody into those things?
well, people who say they aren't are kidding themselves, perhaps. So yeah, you moved around, you moved from Asia to the US. Would you say you prefer any particular region or country to work in, or is that all the same?
You
Will
know, I
you
get
go with
this
the same?
question a lot. People go, "Where's your favorite country?" And I love and embrace every experience and every country that I have the opportunity not just to live and work in, but to travel to as well. So, you know, Australia is my birth country. It's my home. But there are amazing things about every single country that I've lived in, and the people, the food, the landscape, and the experiences to be had. I think if I were to identify a favorite, there would be a favorite for food, there would be a favorite for travel, there might be a favorite for people. I really believe you need to lean into every experience that you have.
So how did you actually get into marketing? Did you start off in marketing right away, or did you juggle between industries before you're settling into marketing?
Yeah, so I started off in consumer research, as I mentioned before. So I was starting to listen and hear about consumer behavior, and that's really where I began the journey. And it was just a wonderful beginning to moving into marketing, because I really was asking a lot of questions about why do people do the things that they do? Why do people buy the things that they buy? Why do they like the taste of certain things over other things? And so that was really the beginnings. And so when I joined IFF, I actually joined in a hybrid role, which was partly consumer insights and partly marketing. And I thought, they're going to find out one day I don't know what I'm doing in marketing. And so I
And they
had
didn't.
severe imposter syndrome. And in fact, you know, I managed to make the leap pretty well from consumer intelligence and insights into the world of marketing, because I think I asked a lot of questions. Why do people do what they do? And that's the beginning of any good marketing strategy.
Well, I guess they still didn't find out that you still don't know everything, maybe, but you
You
must know
go.
something, to
Well,
be a VP
it was
marketer.
very, very interesting, because I felt quite insecure. I think they call it imposter syndrome. I had imposter syndrome, and I actually went to study at Columbia University in New York to do a CMO or a chief marketing officer course, and found in fact that I was contributing more than I was receiving. And in fact, they asked me to come back and do some guest lecturing for them as part of the Columbia program on chief marketing officer. So I guess I kind of got my own back.
Well, I guess it might be quite surprising to a lot of people to hear, even senior people like yourself suffering from, let's say, confidence issues, or even in your case, imposter syndrome. Can you tell us, from a senior executive's perspective, how prevalent this could be actually?
I think it's alive and well. And it probably happens more with women than perhaps with men. I'm not really sure. But it's really whenever you begin something new, whenever you move a country, or whenever you take on something that's a completely new territory or field or industry, for example, I think it's right and appropriate for people to say, "Well, I'm not sure what I'm doing. This is new." And the best thing at that moment is to be asking lots of questions, to stay humble and say, "I actually don't know this industry. I don't know this new area. area. I don't know this new country. And being humble enough to ask the questions and say, how can I learn and gain wisdom from the people who may have been there, are more seasoned as leaders, or are more seasoned in the industry? And that's the key to being able to unlock that imposter syndrome and be able to move past it. But I think there's a level of healthiness. It's not something that people go, they're genuinely going to find out. It really is about a reflection of yourself and saying, well, how do I listen and not understand this industry and get to know it better before I jump in and start trying to solve problems.
Would you say it took you long to get through the imposter syndrome, or would you say you're still finding ways to deal with that?
Every time you start something new, that is basically
every day.
Yeah, there you go. But it's even things like there's I wouldn't call it imposter syndrome anymore, but there's a healthy respect for new beginnings. And you know, my organization went through a really large merger about 2 years ago. So IFF made a significant acquisition of a portion of DuPont. And so as a part of that, there was a whole new portfolio that I didn't know, that many people didn't know, and we had to learn. And through that process, really understanding and appreciating a different industry, a different way of selling, a different way of marketing. And so all of these new things come up often. And I think if you can challenge yourself and you can ask questions, then you can make progress along those journeys. So I think my days of they gotta find out, I don't know what I'm doing, are kind of over, but there's definitely still a healthy respect for the continuous learning journey.
So do you have any advice about how people can cope with this better? Because obviously a lot of people, I assume they've got high expectations of themselves, and especially people who want to, you know, go into a directorate level or even above in a company. How would you advise people to cope with the pressures a bit better?
Yeah. Oh, I wish I had a band-aid solution for all of those things, because if I remember back to my very first presentation, and I remember it so vividly. I was sitting, you know, I entered into a boardroom and it was with a brand new client, and I was still fairly junior. And, you know, it was one of those boardrooms that had like this mahogany table and these really high leather back seats and all these, you know, faces staring at me as I walked in the room. And I royally screwed up my very first presentation. In the consulting world, that's kind of the kiss of death. And it was one of the, you know, it was so bad, and I lost my words, and I just got nervous, and I ended up having to sit down, and my boss had to take the helm and finish the presentation. And I remember thinking, you know, I'm never going to get this right. I'm never going to be good enough in this environment. And I sat back and then I thought, well, hang on a second. If I think that today, I will never be good enough. I will never be able to stand in front of a room and give a presentation. And many people who would know me today would say, my gosh, you give presentations all the time. You give them every day. You know, how did that happen? And it really was a decision to say, I'm going to be brave and I'm going to put myself out there again and again and again, and I'm going to give it a shot one more time, but this time I'm going to be even more prepared. And I started to work on myself, work on my presentation skills, work on the way in which I projected myself, work on my body language, work on my voice. And today I give presentations all the time, and I've come a long, long way, but it was because I made a choice to be brave, to take some risks, and to be prepared and to upskill myself. And so if you feel like there are gaps in your knowledge or gaps in your skill set, take the personal responsibility to create those things for yourself, because nobody else is necessarily going to say, you know what, I think you might need to work on this or that.
Well, I hope you don't mind if I ask a bit further about your scars. if
sure.
I can say this. So, you know, you mentioned your boss had to, you know, complete the presentation for you.
Yeah.
So you must be scared, right? And what happened afterwards? Can you tell us what your boss did and how you managed to pick yourself up?
Yeah, that's a great question, and this is the key and something I really learned as somebody who now leads people. You know, they sat me down afterwards and said, you know, what went wrong? What happened for you there? And they gave me another chance, and they helped to shape and nurture me and mentor me through the process to become a better presenter. Took me to or sent me on a course. They said, you know, is this something that you feel like you don't ever want to do again, or is it something that you want to do? And I said, I absolutely want to do that. You know, the definition of being brave is not being, it's not about being scared. Of course, I was scared. I was petrified the next presentation I had to give, but I did it anyway. And step by step by step, I learned. And so being brave enough to say, I'm scared, but I'm going to do it anyway, or I don't know what it means to move to a new country, but I'm going to say yes, and I'm going to figure it out as I go along. Those are the keys to making progress, is to be scared, but to do it anyway. Not sure if you want to put your hand up for a project, but say yes and get some advice. Surround yourself with people who can help you and support you on your learning journey.
Can you put a finger on why some people, when confronted with the same set of scenarios, might back down, but other people who might even be not as intelligent as those people who back down might be brave enough to say, I'm going to do this again. Can you put your finger on why?
I don't know. I think it ultimately comes down to a choice. It ultimately comes down to a choice of people saying, I'm prepared to take a risk, or I'm not prepared to take a risk. And the risk takers, the ones who are prepared to put their hand up and say, give me a shot, or let me have a go, as we might say in Australia, or take the opportunity to do something that's outside your comfort zone. And the people who are comfortable with being uncomfortable, I might say that again because it kind of sounds weird, but if you're prepared to be uncomfortable with uncomfortableness, that's when you make great progress. That's when you move into territory that is uncharted, and it's where you make the biggest steps, I believe, in your career.
Would you say you have always been a risk taker, or did you have to learn this?
I think that very first presentation was a great lesson in becoming a risk taker, but it's kind of part of who I am as well. So in my mid to late 20s, I actually left my company, and I took 6 months off to travel through Europe and the US, and backpacked around, you know, many different countries. And a lot of people say, oh my gosh, why did you do that? That's so risky. Or, you know, I would never do that. Maybe I would go on a week's holiday or a couple weeks vacation, but to take 6 months, I mean, you didn't know if you had a job when you got back. And all of those things are true. But I think there's an inherent, as part of me, there is a desire to experience the world and to take some risks. And I was prepared to do those things. So I think some people are a little more open to risk taking. It doesn't, you know, if you're not, it doesn't prevent you from taking risks in your career or in your professional life. But I think me having that propensity in my personal life was a great benefit in that regard.
Obviously then you climbed up to You climbed up the career ladder, you end up being the VP of marketing in your company. Would you say this is not the right approach for most people? Because not everybody is suitable to become, a C-suite leader of a big company. Would you say it's taken a lot of time for you to decide whether that's the right thing for you, or did it come naturally to you?
No, it absolutely, you know what? All I did was to say yes for opportunities that were put in front of me. I did what I would call what was in my hand and what was in front of me. And so if that meant it meant saying yes to a project that got me some exposure, if that was saying yes to becoming a better presenter, if that was to say yes to change countries, If that was to say yes to offering to be a part of projects that were not necessarily in my wheelhouse, but that gave me exposure in some way, I think the key is to look at what's in front of you. And, you know, everybody's career journey is different. You know, it's not a ladder that necessarily climb one rung or one step at a time. It really is a journey. And it can go sideways. It can go to take many, many different paths. And there isn't one right or wrong path for everybody. Everybody has their own unique journey. And that's what makes every individual super special.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, you mentioned saying yes to most opportunities presented to you. And you, I guess, you know, obviously somebody who wants to further improve their skill sets every day, whether that's presentation, whether that's communication and so on. So what gives you the motivation behind this? What do you think, you know, the meaning of work is to you?
To me, it's a lot about team and it's all about people. So I have a pretty large team and they're located all over the world. I have a fascination for people and the way in which they work and to help people feel fulfilled in whatever they are called to do. And so the greatest satisfaction I can ever have is to see people released into the calling that they were born into or that they wish to pursue. And sometimes that means that people say, you know what, I'm not interested in becoming, you know, sitting in your seat. Maybe it's being the best graphic designer they can be, or maybe it's being the best digital marketer that they can be. I think there are different tracks that people can take. And some people like the managerial track and other people like the specialist track. And there isn't a right or wrong to that. It's just a different kind of pathway. So the most meaning I find is to be able to identify for people and with people which track they want to head down and helping them to gather the skills that they need to fulfill all that they were called to be.
So yeah, I think, you know, teamwork definitely a very important thing for people to enjoy, to actually find meaning in work aside from, you know, a stable paycheck. So, you know, talking a little bit about your company, can you tell us, you know, why you chose to work for your company and what's in it for other people to join IFF?
Yeah. So we call, you know, if you work for IFF and the logo is blue, if you've never seen it, we call it having blue blood. And so there's a spirit that is alive within IFF. Now we're a $12 billion company. We're a publicly listed company. It's not a small company, and we listed on the stock exchange, but it still feels like an entrepreneurial company. So I talked a little earlier about coming from a startup, and what really attracted me most to IFF was the fact that it was a big company, but it felt like the entrepreneurial spirit was still alive. And I love that. I really love that people have the freedom and the autonomy to be able to follow the path that they want to be. I mean, we have scientists and neuroscientists and chemists and marketers and salespeople, and all kinds of people that it takes to work within a multinational, multicultural environment. But I love the fact that it is that this entrepreneurial spirit, people can follow their passion and do what it is that they're called to do, but within a framework of a big company, and therefore have some of the opportunities to pursue their passion.
So any idea how some companies like yours can continue maintaining their entrepreneurial environment despite being, you know, a listed company, whilst some other companies might struggle to do so even after reaching a few hundred employees? So what's any secret behind this?
I don't know that there's a secret, but it really comes down to the leadership. and the leadership listening to the people. Now, a leadership doesn't change the culture of a company. It really comes down to the types of people that they attract and the types of people that they employ. And so you don't have, a leadership of, let's say, 20 people at the top who dictate a culture. They can't do that. And if they think they can, then
Well, then they're just control
kind of
freaks, I guess.
exactly. And so it comes down to the types of people that they employ. So when it comes to looking at resumes or CVs, what are the not just the hard skills that they're employing, but what is the character of the people? What are they looking for? And when you identify that this entrepreneurial spirit is something that's so precious within a company, you're looking for those kinds of people to attract within the organization. And people who want to pursue and have got ideas and who want to pursue their own passions within the framework, it's the secret is in employing the people who have that kind of spirit and that kind of heart.
So, a lot of people, especially the younger generations, they don't want to just work for a paycheck, but they, care a lot about the values of a company and how their job can impact the community. So, working in such an entrepreneurial environment, how would you say they could impact their community and any particular community or target audience that, people in IFF are aiming at through their work?
There's many, many, and this is the beautiful preciousness of such an organization, because they're if you're interested in diversity and inclusion, there's a whole community, and there's an approach that we have around diversity and inclusion. If it's more around green and sustainability or environmental, there's avenues to get involved, and we have very lofty ESG goals. So that's another direction. If it's around a certain skill set, or it's about the movement in science and biotechnology, that's an area to get interested in. So there are many different avenues to pursue, and that's what makes a company so entrepreneurial and attracting of those people, is that whatever your passion, whatever your interest in, there is space to express that.
So, finally moving on to the final section of the interview, I'd like to ask a little bit about more about career related questions. So I
Sure.
guess a lot of people watching this podcast are people who might be dissatisfied with their jobs or who might be satisfied but might want to explore other avenues. So, do you have any advice when it comes to people choosing between careers, industries, or companies?
Oh, such a, I mean, that's a loaded and a big, big question.
Sorry if it's a bit too complicated, but you can just
It's
try your
no, it's all
best.
good. Yeah, you know what? You really do need to follow your passion. If you are following a paycheck, the satisfaction that you get each and every day is never necessarily going to be there. So think about what flicks your switch. What is it that if you're going to spend 10 hours a day doing something, what's going to make you happy? What's going to spark joy? What's going to make you wake up every day? Because a paycheck doesn't make you wake up every day and turn
No.
up. Show up to a meeting, show up to a client or to a customer. Your heart and your hunger for what you love to do is going to do that. So I think first and foremost, think about what flicks your switch, what really drives you and what excites you and what gives you energy. And then, of course, if you can find something that pays you for fulfilling those things, because I love to scuba dive. But that's not really going to pay the bills. But I like to take risks, and that can be expressed both in my personal life, but also in my professional life as well. So I think about what it is you love to do and who you are and how you can best express that. Not everybody loves to be an entrepreneur. Some people like structure. And look for an organization and look for a company that is going to give you, or a role within a company that is going to give you structure. And I think understanding yourself and your own skill set, but also the environment that makes you thrive, the environment that makes you come alive. Find a community of people just like that, and you will find success and fulfillment in whatever you choose.
Well, thank you so much, Karen, for your really inspiring interview. And, I wish you all the best. And yeah, thanks for coming up to my podcast.
You bet. Thanks, Adrian.